Thank you very much, Tom. It's a great pleasure to be able to speak to you all here today. I'm going to pick up on a number of the themes that Tom was outlining. What's happening here? Here we go. I'm going to do three things. Firstly, I'm going to do a medium to long-term economic growth projection for South Australia out to 2027 and look at the demand for skills as a result of that, taking on board the prospective mining defence booms and some other factors. Second, I want to emphasise that, in my opinion, a big education and training effort is needed, irrespective of the economic growth path that we follow. And I'll show you two case studies of Salisbury and Playford councils, which I've been working on. And finally, another project that I've done with Salisbury, I want to show that it's not just skills that are likely to be needed, but a particular sort of skill in the future for economies like ours, post-industrial advanced societies, and that is training in how to run a small business. I'll rapidly run through this. Next year was expected to be extremely good, as you can see. World economic growth expected to be something like high fours. With the present credit meltdown, you can probably knock half a percentage point off that, but it's still going to be pretty strong growth globally, and Australia probably in the order of a bit over three, and I might tell you that the figures just came in for this year. GDP grew at 4.4% through to the end of June this year, much faster than people expected. So next year looks like it's going to be pretty good. Okay, well, that's next year. Well, what about looking out a bit further? OECD does medium-term scenarios, and Australia is still expected by OECD to average 3.6% growth per annum with excellent inflation, unemployment and long-term interest rate outlook compared with most other countries. Our own local long-term forecaster, ABARE, and if you're at the back, you can't possibly see this, shows that world economic growth out to 2012 is expected to be 3.9%. So the trend rate of growth for the world is approximately 4% per annum. Now, real, four. The OECD area, that's the rich countries, 2.3, much less than the world. China, 8, India, 7, and of course China is currently, and India, both exceeding those growth rates. So if we look out into the longer term, out to the 2050, which people interested in global warming like to do, we can see that a major transformation of the world economy is going to happen. Now, if you project the world economy at 4% per annum to 2050, something amazing happens. The world economy will be 5.5 times the size that it is now. 5.5. It's going to be dominated by China and India, which will be over 40% of the world economy, plus America, another 16. Over half of the world economy will be China, India and America. China itself will be 1.5 times the present size of the world economy in 2050. India will be 3/4 the size. So if you believe that if you don't want to believe the stronger for longer minerals story, I think you have to take this into account. There is no way known that they're going to give up wanting raw materials, skills and all the rest of it as these countries advance. It's a major transformation of the world economy. Europe, which is currently 20% of the world economy, is going to shrink to 10%. They're going to become less and less relevant, and Australia is wonderfully positioned if you have a sense of geography with India, China and America. Where are they? Close by. Now, according to Access Economics, South Australia is not expected to share in this bounty. Our share of the national economy is going to shrink, according to this, notwithstanding that over the last 5 years or so, our share has remained more or less constant. But Access doesn't believe we've got much going for us. And I'm going to prove to you that that's not so. Starting with this graph, which many of you have already seen. This is mineral exploration, and the gorilla in the pile here is, believe it or not, Western Australia. All the rest are down here tailed off for second, third and ultimate positions, but the one that's coming from the cloud here, the red line, is South Australia. And the increase in exploration expenditure in South Australia has been prodigious, and as we know, it looks like it's going to be correlated with a significant advance in mining activity, certainly with the expansion of Olympic Dam. The next thing I want to show to you is what's happening in size of business. Now, personal here is personal businesses. That's businesses that employ nobody. And 59% of Australian businesses employ nobody. This is easily the biggest form of business in Australia. Micro businesses, the next biggest, employ fewer than five. These two together form over 85% of all businesses in Australia. Small businesses employ fewer than 20, and together they constitute over 95% of all businesses in Australia. So the medium and large businesses are a very small group, but they employ quite a lot of people. In fact, about a quarter of the employment in the country. These small businesses employ approximately half of employment in this country. People don't appreciate how significant they are. If you look at the growth rates here, small business, personal and micro, are all growing faster than the medium and large businesses. This is over the period 84 to 2001, no later data, because there's a break in the series from ABS, and much faster than overall. Public sector has been shrinking. This is from 1984. Do you remember the days when we had a state bank and we had a lot of public sector producers of manufacturing in the construction, wholesale business? They've all gone. We're down to core public service. We've lost about 30% of the public sector out of those areas. Another one that I want you to look at very carefully is manufacturing. Now, we know that manufacturing is going backwards in Australia. We're all brought up on this. And that's true if you look at medium and large manufacturing businesses. But hello, what's happening here? Personal, this is very, very small businesses in manufacturing, have been growing persistently throughout this period. These are not making standard products. They're one-offs, innovative. This is where the future of manufacturing lies in Australia. We cannot compete with a $4,000 car from China. As globalisation proceeds, the things that are done best overseas in large relatively standard ways are going to migrate there. But we have this great potential with things that are more differentiated. So that's a very important part of the story I want to tell you, that we have a big future in the post-industrial society in the growth of these small businesses relative to government on the one hand and large business on the other. Now, population change. Again, South Australia hadn't been doing too well, but recently, thanks essentially to a big growth in migration, that red line is our rate of population growth, we've been doing a lot better. And there has been some small movement upwards in the fertility rate as well. But migration looks like an important ingredient in our long-run future. Now, here's my take on the future. You can get this off the website later, but here is the Olympic Dam defence boom over the next 7 years or so. It's going to more than double, if it happens, but it seems extremely unlikely that it won't happen. double the growth rate over that period from 2.75%, which is the standard Treasury assumption about the growth rate of South Australia, which I've projected here as the blue line. That's what Treasury normally says we're going to grow at, 2.75% per annum. And this is what I expect is going to happen to us thanks to the Olympic Dam defence and the small business boom and the mining boom and the continuation of that through this period over this time. So in the 10 years, we'll have grown at an average of 4.2%. Now, you see, this is a transformation of the South Australian economy. I think we have no idea just what an impact this is going to have on the state. It's going to go down a path that looks a bit like Western Australia over the next little while. Now, those are the growth rates of that's the growth rate of output, and that's the assumptions along the top line here. Some assumptions fed in about productivity growth. 3% there is very high, but of course that's got a big share of mining in it, and mining has the highest productivity of any industry in Australia. And when you subtract those from the output growth rates, you're left with the employment growth rates down here. Starting with 750,000, which is where we are at present, we can project the employment out, or the demand for people at work, for the number of jobs available, out according to those growth rates. And what I've then done is to classify those projections of total employment by the South Australian employed persons classification using the census by post-school qualifications, projecting those out to 2027, assuming the same sort of progression in upgrading of skills as we've seen in recent times, and then using that to derive workforce skill requirements, and we get a pretty sensational sort of result. This is the structure, and we'll do the absolute numbers in the tick, but this is about 20%. This is people with degrees, 20% of the labour force in 2006, going in excess of 35% in 20 years' time. And the percentage with no post-school qualification falls progressively to quite low numbers in 20 years' time. And that is a very, very important conclusion out of these figures. If you haven't got a post-school qualification in 20 years' time, or over the intervening period, you're going to be struggling finding work. These are the absolute numbers. The total employment is going to increase by 50% over this period in 20 years. That's a simple implication of the growth path, assuming Olympic Dam, the mining boom, and the defence boom, and the small business increase occurs in this state. This is completely different from what we've experienced over the last 20 years, where employment growth has been, let's say, 1%, 1.5%. Here we've got 150,000-odd people with degrees. Here we've got over 350,000 with degrees. The number of people with jobs with degrees in this state is going to more than double over the next 20 years. Whereas the numbers of jobs for people without any qualifications are going to hang in there for the next 10 years or so and then start to taper off. People with certificates increase about 50%. So here are the increases in pluses and minuses. You can see very large increase here in demand for people with skills, another big increase for people with diplomas and certificates, and flat no increase for people without any post-school qualifications. So in the next 20 years, employment in South Australia will increase 30 to 40%. Jobs for people with degrees will more than double. With diplomas and certificates will increase by more than 50%. And without post-school qualifications will not grow at all. So people without that will have to look for jobs. People are retiring, dying, or whatever. But in my opinion, a large increase in training needs is needed, irrespective of the economic development path. Looking at two case studies of Salisbury and Playford, which I've done. This is some work that I did. I prepared some accounts for them, gross regional product accounts, like the gross state product or gross domestic product, projected out to 2015-16, used the census-based numbers on industry qualification and residence. You can find out where the people are, where they live, and did some scenario projections of skills demands in these two areas up to 2015-16. This is two scenarios. One was fast growth, which assumed 4% growth per annum in the two areas, and then slow growth, which assumed that manufacturing fell on its head and the growth rate of output fell to about 2%. We look at the fast growth scenarios first. And the thing to notice here is that it doesn't come up too well, but it's an extra 3,500 approximately degree jobs needed out in Salisbury, and only 1,800 odd jobs for people who don't have a post-school qualification. So in Salisbury, for the fast growth scenario, we can see that there's big demand is going to occur for people with degrees. Playford, ditto, even more strongly the case, 3,600 extra jobs for people with degrees, and only 334 jobs for people with no post-school qualifications. Why is that? Salisbury is even more strongly dominated by manufacturing over than Salisbury is. 40% of the Playford economy is manufacturing, and the skill requirements, as manufacturing isn't expected to grow that fast, are not very high out of that sector. Slow growth. This is what's interesting. When you cut the growth rate to 2%, you still get 1,611 jobs, degree jobs coming out, and only 1,100 jobs for people without any qualifications. Playford, even more acute, 2,000 jobs for people with degrees, and a fall in the number of jobs for people without any qualifications out at Playford. So I draw from this a view that the labour force, that the economy, is moving in an upskilling direction with relentless force, and irrespective of what happens to the growth rates of the economy, we are going to see a tremendous demand for upskilling of the labour force. Then this is for Salisbury, another piece of work I've recently completed for them, looking at the distribution of jobs by size of business. These are the small ones, zero employees, up to five, up to 20. And you can see that the small ones, this is from 0 to 20, you're going to get, according to these projections, about another 4,000 jobs. This is on the fast growth scenario, compared with 3,700 for medium and large businesses. That's for businesses employing more than 20 and upwards. Below 20 is going to outgun the bigger guys in terms of the numbers of jobs that are generated. Public service, public sector, only 875. If you think that this is where the jobs are going to come from, wrong. They're going to come very, very heavily from the small business sector. EMP is employers. There's a lot of those are, of course, small businesses as well. If you add them in here, you can see you get exactly the same sort of pattern. Now, why are these tiny jobs in tiny businesses increasing so fast? Well, there's five reasons, which I think some of them are interrelated as to why this is so. First is sheer affluence. there is not a lot of point in being extremely, in being affluent, being able to have a high standard of living, if the sort of job that you have to do means you park your brain at the entrance on the way in. That why shouldn't you be able to express yourself at work as you would like to do in the rest of your life? And where can you... You cannot do that very easily in a business that has tens of thousands, or a government bureaucracy that has tens of thousands of people in it, because they all have to obey rules. Otherwise, nothing's going to get done. I mean, you have to be disciplined. But you don't want to be disciplined. You're a human being. You want to express yourself, you see. So, if you can... people are willing to give up at least some of their income that they would otherwise enjoy if they can have the satisfaction of being able to do their own thing. That's Adam Maslow talked about a needs hierarchy, that at the height of this is the desire to be self-expressive, self-actualize. After you've satisfied your needs for security, for sustenance and so on, they're lower order needs. We've gone miles past that. And so you can see that this... As we'll see in a tick, your children, my grandchildren, Generation Y, are right down this path. See, everybody says they're undisciplined and so on. No, they're rich. They're rich, you see. They want to count as people. Secondly, long-tail economics. And Adam Smith said that specialization is limited by the extent of the market. As the market gets bigger, the opportunity for more and more specialised, differentiated products increases. And combine that with two other things here, globalisation and digital technology, and you can see that small businesses with an opening on the internet can command the world in terms of demand for their product, and they do. I mean, look at eBay, see? You can flog it to anybody. Amazon.com makes more money selling rare books that nobody can find anywhere else than it does selling Harry Potter. Because you can buy Harry Potter anywhere, see? But if you're into producing obscure books about left-handed koalas or something, you know, then Amazon.com is your place. There are probably thousands of people interested around the world and only two in Adelaide. Finally, microeconomic reforms that we've been seeing create opportunities for small businesses. What you see in an economy that is not being shaken up with reform is that the established players always relentlessly try to confine the market to themselves. They don't want any extra competition. They don't want these newcomers on the block. But when you start getting the sort of reforms that we've had in all across a broad front in Australia, the main thing that comes out is the increase in opportunity for new players. Many of them, tiny, small, can get their foot in the door. And insofar as we continue down that path, we will have a great opportunity for these littlies. Who takes up... what are the demographics of these tiny business startups? Well, there's research around the planet shows there's four groups that are going to drive this in particular. It would be across the board, of course. But firstly, aging baby boomers. And what we know is that startups are particularly strongly found amongst people of 55 and over, particularly from 65 and over. Not too many in this room here of that age, but there are one or two. And we know that the baby boomers, that the demographics are moving so that the baby boomers are going to be the fastest growing group in this age group that we've seen in a long, long time. So we can have a huge increase in baby boomers who are willing to start small businesses. What do? They take the skills they've learned in some employment that they've been in. They're sick of doing that. They want to start counting as a person. Why not invest some of their retirement benefits into starting a new business in their home, whatever, and see how it goes? And this motivation is particularly strong amongst women. So that we can expect that there will be a big supply of people willing to start new businesses as the baby boomers age. Second, women with children under 15. We hear a lot of talk about life-work balance. Now, one of the easiest ways of achieving life-work balance is to work where you have your life, that is, at home. And so, unsurprisingly, you find lots and lots of women like having being in business in their own home or in the neighbour's home. And that this is a means by which they can express themselves and in an environment in which they feel comfortable and familiar. Thirdly, migrants. Now, migrants have got a skill that non-migrants don't have. They know about products that are somewhere else. They know about services that are somewhere else that don't currently exist in their new country. And so, surprise, surprise, you see that when migrants arrive in Australia, they bring pasta and God knows what with them, you see. And the locals take to that. So it provides a business opportunity. Migrants are very highly represented amongst small business people starting small businesses because they have this opportunity. And then finally, Generation Y. These are 0 to 25 or 30 or so. And this is the most entrepreneurial, a study show, this is the most entrepreneurial group of people ever born on the planet in the advanced countries. And why is this so? It's because of the computers. This is what the most prevalent answer is. Because they've grown up with computers. If you've watched your children, who can't even read, play games and so on computers, you'll see something very, very interesting that they learn by doing. They don't care that they made a mistake. They start again and they keep on going until they get it right. And so what they've learned off the computers, according to these studies, is that you can take risks. It's okay to take risks. You just try again. If something goes wrong, have another go. See, and so they want to look after themselves. They don't want to be told what to do by people like me. They want to tell themselves what to do. See, they rely on each other. They understand each other. So this Generation Y is likely to be a very strong source of entrepreneurs, of business, new business people in these small businesses. So what we need, just winding up, in order to meet this strong demand, labour force demand, which I've talked about, we're going to need to raise the labour force participation rate of all of those groups. We know from studies from Treasury and so on that we can't meet this sort of demand unless we get older people not to retire to provide some greater contribution in the labour force. Same with women. Our female labour force participation rate is relatively low. If we get more migrants coming in, this will also raise our participation rate because the migrant groups as a whole have a lot more adults in them relatively to children. We get the package has more participation in it. And then Generation Y. I'd just like to wind up finally on the particular characteristic of Generation Y, which I think is very important. And that is that work in America and Canada has shown that disaffected youth, heavily discontented with school, go around burning schools down and that sort of thing, are often highly entrepreneurial in characteristics. These are people for whom the discipline and order of school is complete anathema, and that these are Generation Y in spades, want to set up and do their own thing. And that what they've discovered in these programs in America and Canada is that putting on small business training courses is extremely appealing to these young people and is an excellent way of holding them in school so they can learn skills alongside. And even ones that have been offending and in reform school and so on, that they have tremendous results getting them to become useful citizens by giving them some business training. So I think that's a sort of extra benefit of going down this sort of path. So just summing up, the picture I get out of this, which has quite surprised me, is that the demand for skills of all kinds, and particularly small business skills as an additional extra, is going to be very, very strong over the next 20 years or so, and that it behoves us to take Tom's desires very, very seriously, that we must do everything we can to try to help our people to move down this sort of path. Thank you.